You're listening to the first episode of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. Each week, we'll bring you more tales of Jonathan Andrews and the Seekers of the Arcane Unknown. Since you're probably listening on Podiobooks.com or iTunes, you should know that you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Let our hands hold the night till open their eyes come. Let our lanterns hold the light till against us there stand none. Let our palms tip the scales till magic finds its symmetry. Let the memories of those fallen be the hammer of our destiny. Hail to thee, friend and foe. Hail to thee, gray death. To thy every challenge I go with my every waking breath. Song of the Torchbearer, traditional hymn of the Seekers of the Arcane Unknown. Initiate Jonathan Andrews stood outside the warehouse, the sharp wind ruffling his brown hair. His black wool peacoat stopped the chill over his torso, but his soft features were still blistered by the cold. He leaned against the deuce and a half, waiting for the signal, and rubbed his rapidly numbing hands together. Jonathan nuzzled his gauzy brown scarf, burying his chapped nose in its folds. The truck was huge, at least from Jonathan's perspective. It was dull brown and had a covered bed large enough to hold 8 men, in spite of the fact that there were only 4 of them deployed on the ground. The cab was fairly massive as well, and Jonathan had to drive the whole thing quite delicately. Even though he was playing the wheelman, Jonathan had only been driving the truck for an hour. Directly ahead of him was the large, tin-sided warehouse. It was easily massive enough to contain several different shipments at the same time. Somewhere in the building was the foreman's office, which would contain all of the manifests and a clue to where the crate was that the Seekers wanted. The lights were on in the warehouse, but they had been on in that particular building every night for 3 days. Lights were not a reliable indicator of human presence. The cars parked around the side of the warehouse, however, were definite proof that there were men inside the building. When Jonathan and his associates had arrived, Jonathan took the liberty of stealing around the side of the building and letting the air out of the tires on the streamlined roadsters. His heart sank with the cars as they eased onto their running boards. He hated to damage such beautiful machines, imagining stealing them instead and cruising down the road at a blistering 60 miles per hour. He also took a bucket of black paint with him and poured it over the driver's side of each windshield, which made him feel even worse. Normally, he wouldn't have been so worried. Robbing a warehouse in the dead of night might bring one or two of the guards, but guards can be paid to forget a lot of things. There might even have been a chance that Jonathan could talk his way out of it, should they catch him. Keegan Wilkinson, Jonathan's headmaster, had arranged for police badges, just in case they encountered any such force. Unfortunately, those same badges couldn't get them into the warehouse. The men who owned that warehouse were not men with whom to be trifled. Jonathan gripped his electric torch tightly in his hand as he fidgeted with the door handle of the truck. If they were pursued, his conveyance would certainly outrun a horse, but men on motorcycles might be another story. The roadsters were a different matter, but Jonathan couldn't imagine those cars giving pursuit now. However, his pursuers might have autoloaders, machine guns, or something worse. Jonathan was starting to wish he smoked, just so he could calm himself. He shuddered and kept his eyes on the roof of the warehouse. The signal was coming. Soon, Jonathan could start the car and they would be on their way. Besides, he told himself, how could he worry when he had the full might of the Seekers backing him? The rail depot at St. David was the middle point between Edenton in the west, capital of the Northland Republic, and Fumiston in the east, one of the most highly industrialized cities on the planet. It was where the cattle drive from the southern lands came to an end, and where high fashion could be found in containers alongside the high tech. The crates inside each warehouse could have had leather or grain, adding machines or trendy clothing, guns or rum. As such, this depot warehousing area was almost certainly under the heavy influence of the mob. Jonathan couldn't help but think of his uncle Milton, who had wanted him to be an archaeologist. The young man hated the dull cataloging and tedium that was archaeology, but he couldn't argue with one thing. At least his uncle wasn't likely to be shot in the next 5 minutes. One thought led to another, and the young man began to wonder about how much it might hurt to take a bullet. Jonathan shivered and pulled his collar up around his neck. He almost wished that he was inside that warehouse, just so he could know what the others were seeing at that moment. He couldn't see through the filmy, faintly glowing windows to know what was happening. Did they have the crate yet? Had they been caught?
Cog, Keegan, and Isabel, his three associates inside, had been gone a long time.
It made sense that he was the getaway driver. Surely, actual infiltration was too much for an initiate like himself. Best to leave it to the agents, right? Come on, guys, Jonathan whispered, his breath fogging in the air. Where's the... Jonathan was interrupted by the sound of breaking glass and a brilliant shaft of light spilling onto the ground outside the warehouse. A grimy man in his mid-30s had been pummeled out of a first-floor window and was now lying in a crumpled heap on the shards of glass outside the tin building. The fallen man seated his palms against the ground and tried to stand, but collapsed with a shallow moan. Just inside the window was Cog, an extraordinarily pale woman with rosy cheeks. Her fists were still raised in a fighting pose, and her mop of red hair seemed to burn in the night. A voice rang out in the warehouse, "Plug 'em, boys!" Cog ducked away from the window in a hail of bullets. That wasn't the signal, but Jonathan figured it was close enough. He drew a small pistol from his jacket pocket as he whipped open the door to the truck. The frosty leather groaned as the young man scrambled into the driver's seat and ignited the engine with a gritty roar. Jonathan slammed the shifter into first and plowed the gas. The truck shuddered to a halt as the clutch connected to the redlining engine. The initiate fumbled with the shifter and the accelerator, desperately trying to get them to agree with one another. His task was made all the more difficult by the pistol grip that dominated his right hand. He threw the pistol to the passenger seat. Jonathan looked up at the warehouse and cursed viciously as he shifted back into neutral and tried to restart the engine. More reports of gunfire scattered through the air like snapping branches, and a line of bullet holes tattooed itself across the closest tin wall of the structure. The exoskeleton of the truck dinged a complaint as a stray round caught it across the side panel. Jonathan yelped and turned the key with whitening knuckles. Once again, the truck rumbled awake. The thought of using his powers briefly crossed the initiate's mind. He had no doubt that his magic could solve the situation, and Jonathan almost began to call out to that being inside him. Then he remembered what Keegan had said to him and thought better of it. Jonathan knew that he could never lightly use his magic. He would have to tough it out. The double doors on the warehouse began to shudder and convulse. Jonathan looked on in amazement as they lithely writhed in their sockets, metal screeching like a banshee. The heavy gauge chain that secured the door handles together with a lock bucked and rattled but held out longer than the door jams. The two massive tin doors simply floated off their hinges, secured in the middle by the lock-in chain. The doors flapped briefly in the breeze like a massive mechanized butterfly. Jonathan now had a clear view inside the warehouse and could see four men with Hallman automatic rifles emptying clips into what appeared to be a crude cubic structure constructed out of crates. Looking closer, Jonathan could see that it floated about 6 inches off the ground and it was drifting steadily towards the now open doors. It was about 10 feet on a side and it appeared to be somewhat hollow. Sparkling cerulean light pulsed out from the thin opening at ground level, and Jonathan could see the long shadows of three pairs of feet. Two of the men stopped to reload, and Jonathan used the opportunity to honk the horn repeatedly. The gangster saw him, and one of them leveled his firearm at the truck. The giant tin butterfly swept into the warehouse and clapped its wings together with the force of a bomb going off. A deafening shockwave swept through the area, and the attackers ceased firing, stumbling around. One of the gunmen threw up. The two doors then settled on the group of attackers, pinning two of them underneath. Even in his deafened state, Jonathan could feel himself calling to Keegan. He shifted into reverse and raced backwards towards the Crate Castle, which had now descended onto the loading ramp. Jonathan heard his pistol slide across the seat and into the crevice between the door and the side of the seat. With a heavy thump, the crates on the loading ramp knocked against the back of the truck. That was apparently all of the notice that Keegan needed, because the bullet-riddled crates sloughed off, revealing the people underneath. The headmaster stood in the center of the pile, directing the levitating objects like the conductor of an orchestra. The poise and grace of the man in his mid-40s was incredible as Keegan drew lines of energy across a hand-sized, pulsing blue glyph that hovered before him. In turn, the crates shuddered and rose to the air, flying to attack the fleeing men inside the warehouse. "Agent Carica, take care of their transportation!" Keegan shouted. Jonathan could just barely make out the headmaster's voice over his own deafness. Jonathan wanted to say that he had already handled it, but he knew that they wouldn't hear him. To the left of Keegan was Isabel Carricker, a young woman with hair like the shell of a hazelnut. She traced out a softball-sized orange sigil in the air that gathered flaming energy about it. It soon became a swirling ball of fire, and she pelted it into the motor pool where the roadster slept. In a flash, she transformed the top-of-the-line, streamlined black sedans into burning wreckage. "Well done," said Keegan.
"Thank you, sir,"
replied Isabel. To the right of Keegan was Cog, carrying a 4-foot-long wooden chest over one shoulder. The tall, red-haired woman's pale skin seemed to glow in the firelight as she leapt into the covered part of the truck with the crate in hand. The truck rocked hard on its shocks when she hit the bed, and Jonathan wondered if she would break it. Keegan and Isabel rounded the passenger side of the truck and threw the door open, sending Jonathan's pistol tumbling out. Keegan, Jonathan, and Isabel held their breaths and winced as it clattered harmlessly against the pavement, its muzzle pointing directly at Keegan's face. Isabel scampered up into the truck as Keegan swept up the weapon from the ground. As the headmaster climbed into the far passenger seat, he shot Jonathan a look that could freeze burning crude oil. "Drive, initiate." "Yes, sir," said Jonathan, slamming down the gas pedal. The truck stalled out again. Isabel and Keegan exchanged looks. Jonathan attempted to appear apologetic as he struggled to restart the truck. Cog interrupted the moment by banging loudly on the rear of the cargo area.
"They're coming back,"
she said, with a detached yet urgent voice.
"Let's go, Jonathan."
I'm on it,"
said Jonathan. Jonathan felt like his stomach had fallen into his feet as the deuce and a half sped towards the front gate of the depot. Keegan reached under his seat and pulled out a satchel-sized shortwave radio. He flipped it on and picked up the receiver, holding it in front of him. "This is Fortuna. Come in, Avenger," Keegan spoke into the microphone. As the static crackled over the radio, another black roadster whipped around the corner in hot pursuit of Jonathan's truck, armed men in black suits riding the running boards. Cog ducked away from the opening in the flap as a stream of bullets tore the back canvas apart. Isabel took cover against Jonathan, and he found it difficult to shift with her on his arm.
"I read you, Fortuna. This is the Avenger Rover,"
came the tinny voice of Augustus Ellsworth over the speaker. Jonathan could hear the roar of another engine in the background of Augustus's transmission. "Avenger, can you take care of the car behind us, over?" asked Keegan with a hint of desperation. A gunfire-filled pause, then...
"Negative, Fortuna. I do not have a shot. Over."
"Cog," called Keegan.
"I'm already on it,"
said Cog with a steady voice as she backed up against the rear window of the cab.
"Slow down, Jonathan."
Cog charged the back flap of the truck, its opening filled with the glare of their assailants' headlights. Jonathan's truck lurched as her powerful legs launched her from the rear fender and through the air towards the roadster, which was almost 20 feet away. Her attackers could only gape in horror as a thick, heavy short sword manifested itself in her hand with a whirl of sparks. Jonathan was certain that they were screaming in the other car. They had to be screaming. In midair, Cog threw the sword with all of her might, and it ripped through the engine compartment like a cannon shell, shearing metal and spilling gasoline over the gravel. She landed on the hood, planting her feet against it and sinking into a crouch. The roadster pitched forward, its rear tires lifting off the ground, and Cog launched herself backward. As the car tumbled onto its roof and sent its occupants in every direction, Cog sailed through the air in a graceful arc towards Jonathan's truck. He knew that she was back on board when the deuce and a half bucked so hard on its wheels that Jonathan thought the axle would break. He heard the wheel wells bite momentarily into the tires and prayed that the metal would not pierce the rubber lining. When Jonathan looked back into the cargo compartment, he saw only Cog, crouched low over the crate, though he could see the stars through the torn open roof. With a flicker of light and sparks, Cog's sword reappeared in her hand as though she had never thrown it. "Well done, Cog," said Keegan and lifted the radio receiver back to his lips. "What's the situation at the front gate, Avenger? Over?" There was a pause, then Augusta said,
"I see several sets of headlights gathering at the gate. I'm in position to strafe the area. Over?"
Keegan smirked and pulled the microphone a little closer. "Give them something to think about, Avenger. Weapons free. I repeat, weapons are free. Over?"
"Acknowledge, Fortuna. Over and out."
When the gate came into view, it was swarming with armed men. Jonathan blanched as he looked at all of the fully automatic weapons pointed straight at him. He knew that if they didn't stop, the men would thoroughly perforate the truck, and that would be the end. Jonathan knew that if they did stop, the men would wait for them to exit the truck, and then the team would probably be tortured and shot. This was the mob, after all. "Drive straight through, initiate!" Keegan shouted. But before anyone could even think of pulling the trigger, a brilliant red biplane descended out of the darkness, raining fire from the skies. Its twin cannons blasted out shimmering blue bolts, which exploded with concussive force as they struck the ground. Men and vehicles alike were thrown aside as the plane blasted by, leaving destruction in its wake. Augustus expertly shot up the area, leaving the road to Keegan to handle. "There's still a truck parked across the road," shouted Jonathan. Keegan ground his teeth. "I see it, Jonathan. Floor it." The men left standing open fire. Keegan and Isabel ducked down as bullets blasted the windshield into their faces like confetti. Jonathan dipped as low as he could, but he still had to see to steer. It was incredible. Bullets and tracers streaked towards his face like hot raindrops, puncturing the seats in several places. Jonathan thought he felt something, perhaps a piece of debris, slap against his shoulder hard enough to throw him back against his seat. Dull pain echoed across his arm, but he decided to ignore it in light of the circumstances. In the back of the truck, Cog flattened herself next to the chest, using it for cover. Isabel traced a fiery glyph from the floorboards, her eyes clenched tight. When she completed it, the sigil folded upon itself, spinning faster and faster, compressing ever more energy into a tiny sphere. Then it winked out entirely. Streamers of fire rushed forth on either side of the truck, whipping through the air like dragons and slamming into the enemy truck in the middle of the road. Sparks spun away from the streamers, showering the occupants of Jonathan's vehicle. Explosions swooped out with deafening force from the points of impact, and the now flaming blockade rocked back on its tires. The remaining men ducked away and shielded their faces from the detonation. Keegan focused on the truck that had been parked across the road and traced a luminous glyph. With force behind his expression, the headmaster began to push the interposing vehicle back, foot by foot, until there was just enough clearance. With a final burst of energy, Keegan shoved it free. Jonathan found himself shouting aimlessly as he swerved past the blockade. The shout metamorphosed into a scream as the back fender caught the interposing wreckage and ripped free from the truck. Then the scream turned into wild laughter as Jonathan found himself speeding up the abandoned highway, more alive than ever before. "Sound off, everyone," said Keegan.
"Agent Carricker here. I'm fine,"
said Isabel.
"Cog here. I'm unharmed."
Jonathan shouted,
"Initiate Andrews here. I'm alive and I'm fine."
Then he turned to see that Isabel and Keegan were staring at him, their expressions woven with concern. Suddenly, the dull pain on his arm began to sear like someone had pressed a hot skillet against it. He was immediately aware of the frosty air on his burning skin and felt a cool wetness spreading up his sleeve. As he touched his hand to his seething shoulder and lifted his fingers to his face, Jonathan realized he had been shot.
How bad are
initiate Andrews' wounds? And did the group really get away scot-free? Who are these mysterious magi? What is their purpose and what's in the crate? To find out, tune in to The Gearheart every Monday night at thegearheart.com. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Runke's Big and Tall Henchman Uniforms. Uniforms for the discerning dastard. Ask any evildoer and he'll tell you. When you got a chunky flunky, put him in a Runke's. And by Zombiscuits, the biscuits zombies grown for. Zombiscuits, they're great.